Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of Fibber McGee and Molly, or Fibber and Molly as I like to call it. This episode is from February 19th, 1946. Well, it seems that Molly's sick. I mean, in real life, she has the flu. And so Doc decides to get Fibber out of the house. And he does this by taking him to a restaurant to eat out. And they're going to decide on where they're going to go, but they haven't made up their mind just yet. So that should be pretty intriguing. And after that is My Favorite Husband from January 20th, 1951. The episode is entitled Liz Stretches the Truth. And we know that Liz is quite a liar. Stretches the truth. She must have reformed or something. Or kind of reformed. Well, anyway, find out when you listen to this My Favorite Husband. After that is Our Miss Brooks from February 11th, 1951. The episode is entitled The Business Course. I have no idea what that's about. And The Halls of Ivy from February 27th, 1952. The episode is entitled Budget Problems. And from You Bet Your Life from October 11th, 4 days before my birth, 1950. The episode is entitled The Secret Word is Grass. And we're not talking about marijuana here, folks. We're still talking about grass that is usually in everyone's front yard, with the exception of Phoenix, Arizona. With the exception of all of Arizona, they don't do grass out there. And for those that came from other areas, they put grass in because they miss cutting the grass, apparently. But anyway, so that's it from these episodes. Enjoy all of them, and I'll see you all back here next week, God willing. And the creeks don't rise. Wear your mask, social distance, keep safe, and we're going to see the other end of this tunnel if you do. Enjoy this show. Shows, actually.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Car New, and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denny.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctive, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life. Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The
makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry, present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. It's always been a temptation, the first of a new year, to make resolutions. Well, even if you can't keep them all, it's good for the soul to make a few. May I suggest one that would be good in many ways and very easy to keep? Well, you've probably guessed it. But why not resolve in 1945 to practice protective housekeeping with wax, with genuine Johnson's wax? I mean, not just wax your floors, but go right through your house from front door to kitchen and give wax protection to your furniture and woodwork as well. To your windowsills, lampshades, ornaments, your refrigerator, picture frames, leather goods. The coat of wax protects all these surfaces from wear, makes cleaning ever so much easier, and adds immeasurably to the beauty of your home. Raise your right hand. In 1945, I will practice protective housekeeping with wax. Thank you.
When a man persists in walking through the snow and slush with no overshoes, when he goes out into the sub-zero morning to get the mail in his bathrobe, when he runs around his cold bedroom floor with bare feet, what inevitably happens? That's right, his wife gets the flu. That's why the doctor is at 79 Wistful Vista, the home of Fibber McGee and Molly.
How is she, Doc? Is she all right, Doc?
Quiet, you little fuss budget.
Huh?
Molly has a light case of flu, that's all. Oh. She has all the medicine she needs, and the balance of my prescription consists of at least 24 hours rest in bed.
Okay, Doc. I'll see that she gets it, and I'll make her some hot lemonade every half hour. I'll keep reminding her to take her medicine.
That's exactly what I was afraid of. Leave the woman alone. Go away and hide. Lose yourself.
Yeah, but what if she needs
something? If she needs anything, Mrs. Carstairs will see that she gets it.
Carstairs, is she coming over?
Yes, she did a great deal of nursing during the war, and when I'm short of nurses, she helps me out.
Oh.
Incidentally, you don't look very well yourself. Get your bay window caught in a waffle iron or something?
No, I ate something last night that didn't agree with me.
What?
Oh, just a little sandwich I fixed up about midnight. Fried egg, bologna, Bermuda onion, cream cheese, and mustard pickles.
Oh, fine. Rigor mortis on rye bread.
No, whole wheat.
Well, how did you sleep?
Like a log.
You don't say.
Yep. Like a log was laying across my stomach.
My boy, you have interior arrangements that would make a 40-ton drill press look like it was made of sponge cake. In all my weary years of practicing medicine, I never...
Oh, that must be Karsty now. Come in!
Oh, hello, Mrs. Carstairs. Nice of you to come over.
I'm very glad to help Mrs. McGee out, Doctor. And good evening, Mr. McGee.
Hiya, Carsty. I sure appreciate this. I hope it ain't interfering with any social engagement. Hey, your fur coat's all rained on. Here, let me hang it up before it gets ruined.
Rain won't hurt it, McGee.
Of course not. To quote an old joke, did you ever see a mink carrying an umbrella? Have you any instructions for me, Doctor, or any suggestions?
Well, they're all written out on the hall table upstairs, Mrs. Carstairs. You know, the usual routine. Keep her warm and quiet. Feed her lightly.
Yeah, just let me know when you want something cooked up for her, Carsty, like milk toast or hot coffee.
Look, bird brain, I'm going to take you out of here. You're going downtown and have dinner with me.
Yeah, but, Doc, suppose she needs me for something.
The only thing she needs right now is a little less confusion. Confusion spelled M-C-G-E-E.
I shall prepare anything she wants, Mr. McGee. Just set your mind at rest.
What, you mean you can cook, Carsty?
My dear Mr. McGee, when I first met Mr. Carstairs, I was slinging hash in a... I was dietitian in a Greek restaurant. Oh, my goodness, I'd better take a look at my patient. Don't worry about a thing, Mr. McGee.
Come on, McGee, get your leggings and mittens on. We'll go downtown and kick a few calories around.
Oh, gee, Doc, I don't think I ought to. I ought to stay here and
get your coat and stop arguing, Noisy, or they'll find your body in a snowdrift strangled with a stethoscope.
Okay, okay. Where'll we go?
We might try that new place on Oak Street, Joe's Gravy Bowl.
Ever eat there?
No, but my office nurse told me she had.
She like it?
No, but she said she ate there under unfortunate circumstances.
What unfortunate circumstances?
She was hungry. Come on, come on, come on, McGee. Quit stalling. I've got to have dinner and get back to the hospital so I can...
Oh, come in.
Hello there, kids. Hiya, Doc. Where's daughter, Johnny?
She's got the flu upstairs, old-timer. And lower your voice about 40 decibels. You sound like the mating call of a sea lion.
Okay, fellas. Sorry to hear about the kid. Anything I can do?
No thanks, old-timer. Not a thing. Hey, we're having dinner at Joe's Gravy Bowl. You know anything about it?
Hey!
Do you know anything about
Joe's Gravy Bowl, eh? I know one of the waitresses down there, Lily Dugan.
Yeah?
Fine girl. Maybe you've seen her in there. Tall, red-headed kid with half your coffee in the saucer.
We never ate there, old-timer.
How's the food?
Hey!
I said...
Not bad, Johnny. Not bad at all. Ask for their T-bone steak smothered in mushrooms with sauce bordelaise. You don't get it, but it's fun to watch their face when you ask for it.
Would you care to join us for dinner, old-timer? We'll flip a coin, odd man for the check.
Sorry, Sawbones. I'd like to join you, but I got a date to go horseback riding with my girl, Bessie.
Horseback riding?
On a night like this?
Hey!
You mean to say you
go... Yeah, on a merry-go-round down at the stadium. Yep, I got a dandy little mare down there, one with glass eyes. Three-gated. Up, down, and wobble. This is our last time. Bessie's getting bow-legged.
Did she say so?
No, but the pleats in her skirt are beginning to open up.
I had a horse once that could talk, old-timer.
Hey!
He said he had a horse...
A talking horse, eh? Say, that's wonderful, Johnny. What'd you do with him?
I sold him. He was an Arabian horse, and nobody understood Arabian.
That's pretty good, Johnny. But that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, one feller says, the t'other feller says... I see where we might be able to travel to the moon one of these days. What do you mean, one of these days, says t'other feller. My sister's already been there. No, says the first feller. Yep, says t'other feller. Got a picture of her setting in it. Took it Coney Island. Well, I hope daughter feels better, Johnny.
Now, come on, Doc. Move those fat little legs of yours, will you? It's starting to rain hard.
Yeah, it's too bad they can't have a little of this rain out west where the soil is blowing away.
Yeah, my gosh. Half an hour of this rain right now would do them more good in 5 minutes than a month of it would do in a week at any other time.
How was that again, Pivot Tooth?
I says a half an hour of this rain would do them more... Oh, hey, there's Latrivia. Hi, Latrivia.
Hello, McGee. Oh, good evening, Doctor.
Evening, Mr. Mayor. Better step into this doorway out of the rain. Yeah. That's it.
Let me in there, too.
You know, Mr. Mayor, I like to be present when you get over pneumonia, not while you acquire it.
After a few years in the Coast Guard, Doctor, dry clothing seems a trifle effeminate. McGee, where's Molly?
She got bit by the flu bug, Latrivia. I had to get Doc out of the house so she'd get well quicker.
And little Gabby here is not what you might call a soothing influence to the ailing, Mr. Mayor. He was yammering around the house like a Southern senator reading corset ads into the Congressional Record. So I'm taking him to Joe's Gravy Bowl for dinner.
You ever eat there, Latrivia?
As a matter of fact, McGee, I just came from there.
What'd you have to eat?
Sand dabs.
Sand dabs?
Yes, that's fish with the little dabs of sand in them.
Well, if that's such a bad place to eat, why don't you go someplace else?
Well, I eat there for old time's sake, McGee. I went to college with the owner. As a matter of fact, we both played in the school band.
What did you play, Mr. Mayor?
I played a tuba.
Tuba what?
It wasn't a tube of anything. It was a musical instrument.
Well, that's pretty ingenious, Latrivia. What'd you do, hold your finger over the end and squeeze it? I knew a guy could play air holes at the filling station like it was a bagpipe.
I didn't make myself clear, McGee. I played the tuba. Don't you know what a tuba is?
That all depends on what. It's a tuba.
Boy, Doc, get in there and pitch.
I tell you, it was not a tube of anything. It was a tuba. T-U-B-A. Tuba.
Well, we're being a little silly, McGee. You know what a tibia is. That's the inner and larger bone of your leg.
Oh, sure, tubia. I used to play it.
I did not say tibia. I said tuba. It's a wind instrument, as I'm sure everyone in the world but you two gentlemen knows.
Wind instrument, eh? Well, what'd you do, hollow out the bone, kind of like a primitive flute? Gee, that must have been quite...
It was not a bone, I tell you. It was brass.
Oh, now, you know better than that, Mr. Mayor. Nobody ever had a brass tibia.
I didn't say anybody had a brass tibia, a tubular, a brassica. Listen, I said I played a tuba.
But you didn't say a tuba what?
Of course I didn't! A tuba doesn't have to be a what or a tibular. I mean to say that a wind instrument, a brass tibia, a tuba, it's a thing that every orchestra has a brassica
McGee. Doctor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes. Do you like to play baseball?
I love it, Latrivia.
So do I, Mr. Mayor.
Then I think I'll write a letter to Cleveland tomorrow.
Hmm?
I think you should both be given back to the Indians.
Well, how was I, McGee?
Oh, you were great, Doc. Molly would have been proud of you.
You better not overdo it with him, though.
Huh?
Not with his blood pressure. He'll blow up like a bubble dancer's balloon at a Legion stag. Hey, is this the restaurant, McGee?
Looks like it, Doc. Yeah, this is it.
Crowded, isn't it, huh?
Yeah. That don't mean anything these days, Doc. These days, you could put a camp stove in a snake pit and people would stand in line three deep to get a plate of French fried heartburn at $3 a spasm. Hey, bud, how about a table for two?
I'm sorry, sir. There were just a few moments' wait. Did you have a reservation?
No, we didn't. We couldn't find your name in the phone book.
I know. I have an unlisted number, sir. Keeps out the riffraff. I'll seat you very shortly.
Well, not a bad-looking joint, is it? Clean, at least. Maybe they...
Oh, look, McGee, there's Wilcox.
Well, it can't be so bad if he eats here. Hiya, Junior.
Hello, pal. Hello, Doc. Where's Molly?
Home of the flu, my boy. Getting egghead here out from underfoot was part of my prescription.
You just finishing eating, Junior? What'd you order?
Well, I ordered eggs stuffed with caviar for an appetizer.
Uh-huh.
Then a cup of pureed Mongol julienne, a mixed green salad with Roquefort dressing, baked mountain trout with almond sauce, a side order of French fried zucchini, baked Alaska, and a demi-tasse.
You got all that stuff?
No, that's what I ordered. I got a club sandwich and a glass of milk.
How was the club sandwich?
Great, great. I could even taste the clubs. I think they'd been used by the Keystone Cops.
I take it you haven't got a very high regard for this June Joiner, or Joint Junior. Maybe we should do the one about the Coast Guard. But what do you eat here for, Junior, if it's so bad?
Lower your voice, pal. The proprietor buys a lot of glow coat from me.
Oh.
Have you been out in the kitchen?
No, we haven't, Junior. Is it pretty awful?
No, it's awful pretty.
Oh.
Imagine. The linoleum shines like a mirror. You know how easily spilled things are wiped off of Johnson's glow-coated linoleum.
Oh, yes, I know how that is.
Well, these people keep the place so clean that you could even operate out there, Doc.
Well, if somebody will give me a knife and a pork chop, I'd like to operate in here.
The owner told me that even with the wear and tear on a busy restaurant kitchen like this, the linoleum lasts a lot longer and looks infinitely better when he protects it with Glow Coat.
Yes, but
he says that with the help shortage and all, they can't spend all day scrubbing kitchen floors.
Well, that's
but with Glow Coat so easy to use and requiring no rubbing or buffing, it's a cinch.
Yeah,
you just pour it out, spread it around, and in 20 minutes or less...
Yeah, but what that got to do with
that's
this?
Why I don't want you fellows to criticize too loudly. He's doing the best he can under difficulty.
Oh, yeah.
And personally, I'd rather eat bad cooking from a clean kitchen than fine food from a messy one. Say, incidentally, what did you order?
We haven't ordered anything yet, Waxy. So far, we've been given the brush like a couple of bad boys on Papa's knee.
What do you recommend, son?
I don't recommend anything, Doc. I was just going to say that if you try the Swiss steak, you'll understand why the Swiss are always neutral. That would take the fight out of anybody. So long now.
Let's go someplace else, Doc. Gee whiz, if they don't want to...
I have a nice table for you now, gentlemen. Right this way, please. Will this table be satisfactory?
It will be if you put something on it to eat.
This place is a little run down, ain't it, bud? No ketchup on the table.
Your waitress will get you some if you wish, sir. Susie, table 12. Here are the menus, gentlemen.
Thank you. Tell me, what is the chef's specialty?
Drinking lemon extract, sir. But if you have any difficulty, please call me.
Well, seems to be a pretty good choice of stuff, Doc. Uh-huh. Country fried chicken looks good to me.
It's scratched off my menu. Oh. How about the roast beef?
Roast beef is scratched off my menu.
Well, we might try the lobster thermidor.
That's scratched off my menu. How about the turkey curry?
That's off mine. Lamb chops?
Off mine. Liver and bacon?
Off. Pork?
Off.
What else is there?
The only thing left that ain't scratched off either one of our menus is this here closed all day Monday. I think I'll have that on whole wheat.
Oh, they must have a few things.
Okay, that... folks, I'm your waitress. What did yous want?
What do you got?
I asked you first. Let's play fair.
My peristalsis has slowed up so much by now, it would take me 5 minutes to hiccup. What's ready, Susie?
The hard rolls is nice.
Look, sis, we didn't come all the way down here to dine off on hard rolls. How's the minute steak?
Well named. The minute you eat it, you wish you hadn't.
We don't want to be fussy, Susie, but what can you recommend?
Sir, I do not wish to seem unloyal to my employer, but there's a hamburger stand 2 blocks north of here.
Oh, come on, sis. Surely you must have something fit to eat in here. What are all these other people eating?
Well, let me see, mister. Those 4 men at the next table, they're gamblers.
Mm-hmm.
They're having the chicken croquettes.
How about the 2 ladies at the 3rd table there?
That's the boss's wife and his sister. They're having sliced ham and potato salad.
Oh, that ain't much of a dish for a cold night like this, sis, but I'll have that.
I'll ask them if they can spare you some. They brung theirs with them.
Look, Susie, knowing what you know, and I'll bet it's plenty, what would you suggest we eat?
Omelets.
Okay, that'll do it. 2 omelets. Okay, Doc?
Okay.
2 eggs or 3 eggs?
Does it matter?
Well, with 3 eggs, you got another 33 and a third chance to get a tired one. Why push your luck?
Okay. 2 eggs then, and lots of fried potatoes and ketchup.
Coffee now or later?
I'll have mine now.
Me too.
In here, we call that a suicide pack. Okay, gents, just write the names of your nearest relatives on the tablecloth, and I'll take care of everything.
Oh, okay. How was your omelet, McGee?
Not bad, Doc. What there was of it? That was a 2-egg omelet, though. They must have used canary eggs.
Mine was a little skimpy, too. I tried to fill up on bread and butter. Wasn't enough butter.
Wasn't enough anything. I never did get any water.
Yeah, so you're trying to get the waitress's attention.
I've been beckoning to her for so long, I got a Charlie horse in my forefinger. Oh, here she is.
Did you want me, folks?
Yes, give me the check, will you, please?
Oh, it's my check, Doc. You suggested this for Molly's sake, so I'll pay.
All right.
You don't put up much of a fight, do you, Pat?
On what I've had to eat, I couldn't Indian wrestle Margaret O'Brien. How much is it, Susie?
$4.40, gentlemen. And believe me, it's been a distinct pleasure to have waited on you.
$4.40? Did you hear that, Doc?
Yes, I did. The tablecloth must be by Adrian.
$4.40 for the privilege of sitting here with a bent port, a dry water glass, and malnutrition. By George.
Calm yourself, blowtorch. Oh. Calm yourself. Come on, pay that ransom note and let's get out of this turnip trap.
Let me check it again. Here. Hey, look at this, Doc.
Look at what?
What it says on the back of this check. If you have any criticisms or suggestions for the improvement of our food or service, please notify the manager.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy, hang on to your hat, Doc. Here we go. Hey, manager. Manager, come here a minute.
Well, as the man said when they found an elephant in his stateroom, I brought this on myself.
Yes, sir. Did you wish to speak to me?
Indeed I did, Buster. I have a few criticisms and suggestions I'd like to offer as per your request on the dinner check.
That's very kind of you, sir. What are they?
In the first place, why don't you give your patrons a glass of water now and then? What did you do before you ran a restaurant? Herd camels?
You're quite right to complain, sir. I realize that the help we have now is inadequate.
And as long as you're running a restaurant, did it ever occur to you to get some food in the joint?
I know our supplies are inadequate, sir, but if you only know the trouble we have getting meat and butter...
Oh, leave the man alone, Moose Jaw. It isn't entirely his fault.
He asked for suggestions, and he's going to get suggestions. Look, Buster, look at this steak knife. You not only haven't got steaks, but if you had, you couldn't cut the gravy with this thing.
I know, sir, I know. I agree with you completely.
And another thing.
Do you mind if I smoke while you burn?
No, go ahead, Doc. And another thing, Buster, the service. I never waited so long to get waited on in my life. You come in here...
Excuse me, sir. Were you ever in the restaurant business?
No, I wasn't.
Well, you are now, sir.
Huh?
I'm a lot sicker of it than you are.
Huh?
If you've only been here two hours and I've been here 2 months, I'm giving the place to you.
Hey, now, wait a minute, bud. I didn't mean to...
Attention, please. Patrons of Joe's Gravy Bowl.
No.
This establishment has just been changed. Your new proprietor is Mr. What's your name, sir?
Patsy McGee.
Your new proprietor, Mr. Patsy McGee.
No.
Thank you and goodbye forever.
Well, now that you're the owner, McGee, I have a few suggestions to make to you. Oh, grab a sugar bowl, McGee. Here they come.
What the... Oh, how did... Who's the...
Look here, mister. I found a nail in my spade.
Hey, you call this library paste mashed potatoes, brother? I've got a good note.
Oh, now, just a minute, folks. I
want to get up the water. Hey, where's my Wilson rabbit?
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Winter must have been a very trying time to our grandmothers in the days when kitchen floors got scrubbed once a week, and please don't track up my floors was such a familiar request. How grateful those earlier housekeepers would have been for Johnson's self-polishing glow coat. Imagine not having to worry about wet feet tracking across the linoleum, or things spilled. If there's a protective shield of glow coat on the floor, you can relax, because spilled things wipe up in a jiffy. And the actual linoleum surface is protected against moisture, dirt, and wear. The regular use of Glow Coat makes linoleum last 6 to 10 times longer, and of course keeps it bright and colorful all during its long life. And that's besides the major job of saving you work. Because it's self-polishing, Glow Coat needs no rubbing or buffing, shines itself while it dries in 20 minutes to a colorful luster. Yes, our grandmothers would have been mighty happy about Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat.
Pearl Harbor and D.J. Day, there were more than 355,000 people killed, 1.25 million permanently disabled, and nearly 35 million injured. On the battlefronts,
No. Right here at home. By accident. That's a pretty shameful figure when you realize that from 50 to 90% of them were due to sheer carelessness. So during these days of worn tires, faulty brakes, and general readjustment, be extra careful. Take a little more time. Take a little more care. Take a lot fewer lives. Thank you, and I'm sure Molly will be back with us next week. Good night.
This is Marlo Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson Wax Finishes for Home and Industry, inviting you all to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
It's the Gay Family Series, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper. Two people who live together and like it. And now, let's look in on the Coopers. It's evening, and George and Liz are entertaining the Atterberries. George has just lit a cigar that Mr. Atterbury gave him.
Hey, that's what I call a cigar.
Yes, sir, that's a real cigar.
In case you were wondering, Iris, those are cigars.
Come on, girl, it's time to move. If we sit here, we'll be downwind from them.
Never mind, Lotus Bud. Stay right where you are. We all have something to discuss.
We all do?
Yes. I hope you Coopers haven't any plans for the weekend.
Not that I can think of. Why?
An important business client is coming into town.
No.
Oh, I knew you'd all be overjoyed.
But, Rudolph, we just entertained out-of-town clients 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Now, Iris, this man could mean a big account for the bank. Let's not bite the hand that feeds us.
Who's the hand this time?
The president of the Abbott Chemical Corporation and his wife.
Oh, he brought his thumb with him.
D.J. Abbott is a very important name.
D.J. Abbott?
Yes, from New York.
D.J. Abbott.
If we can arrange a loan for him, he may move one of his plants here.
D.J. Abbott.
Liz, is your needle stuck?
That name, D.J. Abbott, seems like I've heard it before.
Well, of course you have. I said it once, and you said it 3 times.
No, I mean it sounds so familiar. Wait a minute. Is his name David Jerome?
I think so. Why?
I went to school with him.
Oh, this is wonderful. Are you sure, girl?
I'm positive. George, you remember Dave Abbott. I went out with him a few times.
Well, tell us about him, Liz. What was he like, anyway?
Well, he was tall and handsome and captain of the football team.
No, he wasn't, Liz. He was little and puny and funny-looking.
Yeah.
George, you're just jealous because I had some dates with him.
Well, I know how we can settle this. Where's the college yearbook?
Now, there's no need to look in the yearbook. I guess I know what Dave Abbott looked like. He was the handsomest man in the class. Oh, I remember his blue eyes and his blonde hair and his wonderful build.
That was me.
No, George, you were the most conceited man in the class.
Wait, here's the yearbook. We'll settle this whole thing right now. Let's see, Aaron, Abby, Abbott. Here he is. Dave Abbott. Oh, handsomest man in the class, huh? Take a look, Liz.
Well, he's certainly changed since I knew him.
Liz, this picture was taken when you knew him.
Oh, yeah. I wonder how I made that mistake.
You were exaggerating, as usual.
Let me see the picture. I think he's rather good looking.
You do?
Well, you like someone who looks like a pig.
Oh, stop being ridiculous. Looks like a pig.
See for yourself, Rudolph.
Well, you know what makes him look that way. It's that apple in his mouth. Oh, come now, you two. He really doesn't look like a pig.
No, of course not.
He looks more like a frog.
He does not.
Oh, Liz, tell me, how can you turn a homely little shrimp into a big, handsome athlete? I never knew anyone who exaggerates the way you do.
Well, what's the harm, George? I'm just looking at my old boyfriend through rose-colored glasses, that's all.
You know, I can hardly wait to meet these people. Do you know the girl Abbott married, Liz?
Uh-huh. I went to school with her, too. She was homely as a mud fence.
Evidently, when you recall women, you put on mud-colored glasses.
Liz, please don't speak about me when I'm gone.
Well, she was ugly, and she had the nerve to run for junior prom queen.
How'd she make out?
How'd she make out? Well, she didn't have a chance with me in the contest.
Oh?
Oh, I made a lovely queen. My flowing robe, my scepter, my diamond tiara perched on my brown hair. My red hair.
Now I know.
Well, anyway, I was a beautiful queen. And I'll never forget the way I led the grand march.
Hold right. It, Liz. I don't remember your being junior prom queen.
You don't?
No. If you were queen, your picture will be in the yearbook. Let's look it up.
Well, it isn't a very good picture of me.
Liz, shall I look up the picture of you as queen?
No.
I don't believe you really were queen.
Would you believe it if I said I was princess?
No.
Member of the Queen's court?
No.
Alternate member of the Queen's court?
No. Oh, Liz, why don't you just admit you were just another girl at this prom?
I can't.
Well, why not?
I didn't go. Nobody asked me.
And exaggerating. Oh, why do you do it, Liz?
Well, George, it's just that I like to color things.
Well, why didn't you say so? George, tomorrow buy her a set of watercolors.
Better make it a case.
What do you mean? I don't do it very often.
Oh, girl, come now.
When did I ever exaggerate with you? Give me a for instance.
For instance? That chair over there. Didn't you tell me George Washington sat in it?
Well, yes, he did.
George Washington?
You keep out of this.
Liz, if George Washington sat in that chair, he must have been floor walker at Sears and Roebuck.
That chair never saw Sears and Roebuck. How'd you find out?
I saw the label one day when you were out of the room, and I happened to be lying on my back underneath the chair.
So I colored things a little.
And Liz, as long as we're bringing these things up, I never did believe you swam the English Channel. Look, Liz, I think now is just as good a time as any for you to stop coloring things.
Well, I'll stop, George, but can't we wait till after the Abbotts leave?
No, Liz, there'll always be another reason. If you're going to stop, do it right now.
Again. This is delicious pastry. It tastes like it came from that delightful pastry shop on the Rue Morel in Paris.
Yes. Exactly.
Did you get it there?
Well, you had it blown over. Well. Don't tell me. I'm trying hard not to. No, Imogene. I bought it at the corner baker's. Oh. He may have had it blown over. Well, at least it reminds me of Paris. When were you last on the continent, Liz? Which continent did you have in mind? Europe. Oh, that one. You've been to Paris, of course. Well, to tell the truth, and you're making it pretty tough. Well, you might as well be dead if you haven't been. Better off dead, huh? Well. Oh, certainly you've been there. Made George turn over in his safe deposit box. Yes. Enchanting Europe. Where did you get to?
Every place.
Every place?
Sure. Why be a piker now?
Well, tell me, how did you find London?
Oh, I just looked under London Bridge and there it was.
But to get back to Paris.
Yes.
Oh, give me Paris in the spring.
Oh, oui, oui.
Oh, vous parlez français?
Huh?
Parlez-vous français?
How's that again?
Do you speak French?
Oh, yes, fluently.
Now, tell me, dear.
Yes, darling.
If Dave builds a factory in Sheridan Falls, I suppose I'll have to maintain a small cottage here. How's the servant problem?
Oh,
I think I can get by with a staff of 10.
10?
Yes. Do you have more?
Of course not.
Well, just 10?
Oh, Imogene, don't be silly. What use would I have for 10 servants?
Well, my dear girl, how many do you have?
I have, 8.
How on earth do you manage?
I doubled up. I taught the downstairs maid how to walk upstairs.
And it worked?
Yes, her ears pop, but she loves it.
Well, Liz, I'll have to try that. Oh, and now I must run, darling. I'm having tea with Mrs. Atterbury.
Oh, yes, Iris. Her husband's president of the bank.
But I thought George... Well, then what's George? Chairman of the board?
No.
Well, Dave spoke about a Cooper who... Oh, Liz, Liz, don't tell me your husband is only third vice president.
Yes, but confidentially, Imogene. You won't repeat this to a soul.
Oh, you know me.
Yeah. Well, George is third vice president in name only.
What do you mean?
He's the brains behind the bank.
But Mr. Atterbury...
A mere figurehead.
Oh, no.
He's little more than a fat dummy sitting on George's lap.
I never dreamed. Well, goodbye, Liz.
No, don't go yet, Imogene. I'm just beginning to warm up. You haven't seen my house yet.
Oh, well, darling, I don't really have time.
Oh, come on. Everything in this house is an authentic, early American antique. Now, over here is the chair.
George, boy?
Yes, Mr. Atterbury.
Could I see you in my office a minute, please?
Oh, yes, sir.
After you, boy.
Thank you.
I just had a call from Iris. She'd been talking to Imogene Abbott.
Oh?
Imogene was telling Iris about the delightful lunch she had with Liz. Oh, here we are. After you.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Not at all.
You're fired! What's the matter? What did I do?
You did a stupid, idiotic thing.
What?
You married Liz.
Liz?
She's been at the watercolors again.
Exaggerating?
Boy.
Oh, what did she say?
Well, it's hard to know where to start. According to Liz, I'm just a figurehead here at the bank, and you're the brains of the outfit.
Did Liz say that?
Yes.
Oh, what else?
Let me sit on your lap and I'll tell you.
What?
She also said I'm just a fat dummy sitting on your lap.
Fat? Anything else?
Loads. But I'd rather not think about them. I may strike you.
Oh, what am I going to do with that girl?
Have you ever thought of putting her in a large basket and leaving her on someone's doorstep?
Oh, don't worry. I'll take care of her when I get home.
Do that, boy. Oh, and incidentally, you know that chair that George Washington sat in?
Yes.
Well, it's aged considerably since the other night.
Oh, what did she say about that?
That is now the deck chair that Columbus was sitting in when he first sighted America.
Give me a kiss.
Liz?
Ooh.
I want to talk to you.
Wait till I unpucker. What's the matter?
I heard something very interesting today.
What?
That I'm the actual head of the bank and Mr. Atterbury is just a figurehead.
Now, who would say a thing like that?
Well, Mr. Atterbury told me. And Iris told him. And Imogene Abbott told her. And guess who told Imogene?
Lizzie Wizzy.
Liz, what's the matter with you? How could you exaggerate like that this afternoon when you just promised me faithfully you wouldn't? Isn't there any answer?
Yes, George. I'm just a pitiful, spineless wretch.
Eight servants, a house full of antiques, springtime in Paris. How does that sound?
Divine.
Never mind, I'm serious.
Oh.
The crowning blow was when Mr. Atterbury heard he was supposed to be just a puppet. And I was pulling the strings. He almost fired me.
That's gratitude. After all you've done for that fat dummy.
There, you see? You're starting to believe your own story. It's getting so no one knows when you're telling the truth, Liz. Not even you.
I'm sorry, George.
Apparently, there's only one way to cure you of this habit. I'll have to take drastic measures.
Like what?
I'm stopping your allowance. And canceling all your charge accounts. Until you finally prove that you can consistently tell the truth.
Well, that's certainly hitting below the money belt.
Well, that's the way it is. Now, when we get to that dinner party at the Atterbury's tonight, I want you to tell the truth. The whole truth and nothing but the truth. Understand?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was a good dinner, Atterbury.
Oh, wonderful.
Glad you liked it. More coffee, Mrs. Abbott?
Oh, no, thanks. I'm afraid I overate.
Well, we have a wonderful cook, if I do say so myself.
You certainly do.
Liz, you didn't eat very much. I thought you usually liked my roast beef.
Well, I do ordinarily, Iris, but tonight it was lousy. What?
Liz.
Well, I don't mean to hurt your feelings, Iris, but I'm starting to tell the truth these days. It's the new me. No more fantastic stories.
That's good, I think.
Wait a minute, Liz. Were all those things you told me this afternoon falsehoods?
Every one of them. The nearest I ever got to Paris was the day I bought George some garters.
God is fired, yes. How about a little sherry for everyone?
Yes, sherry.
I love a good sherry.
This is a rare old import.
Is it really imported, Mr. Atterbury?
Well, of course it is, Liz.
Well,
why?
I want to know what the real thing tastes like. Iris told me you usually pour cheap cooking sherry into these expensive bottles.
Are you out of your mind, Liz?
Oh, she got you that time, Atterbury. I remember in school you always had a good sense of humor, Liz.
I did?
Yes, oh, those were the days. You and I had some good times together, didn't we?
No.
What?
Oh, brother, were you dull. Well,
she's kidding you, Mr. Abbott. She was just saying the other night how good it would be to see old Dave Abbott again.
Oh, did she say that, Liz?
Well, not exactly. But we were talking about you the other night, Dave.
Oh, really? What did you say? Let's go in the living room.
How about a cigar?
No, wait. I think I'd like to hear this. What did you all say about me, Liz?
Well, I said you were good looking and built like an Adonis.
Really?
Yes, until I saw your picture in the yearbook.
Thanks.
Liz, please. Mr. Abbott, I saw your picture and I remember remarking you were very handsome.
Well, thank you.
Iris, how can you say that? You were the one who thought he looked like a pig.
I've never been so insulted.
Liz, I'd like to see you in the hall.
George, I'm only telling the truth. Dave, you'll be glad to know that George stood up for you.
Well, that's something. Thank you, George.
You're welcome.
He disagreed with Iris. He didn't think you looked like a pig.
Well, good.
He thought you were more the frog type.
That does it. So this is the way you treat your clients, Atterbury?
No, Abbott.
Well, I'll just take my business elsewhere.
Please, folks, let's all calm down. Liz will apologize, and we'll all have a glass of this awful cooking sherry.
No!
Oh, Dave, be sensible. Sit down.
You keep out of this, Imogene. When I want your advice, I'll ask for it.
Liz, tell Mr. Abbott you're sorry.
I'm sorry you look like a frog.
What's so funny?
I never noticed before, but you really do look like a frog.
Well, you're no Betty Grable, you know.
Oh, now, Dave, you shouldn't say that. You told me yourself she was a very pretty girl. Oh, when did he say that? The night he told me if I didn't marry him, he'd either kill himself or marry you. Apparently, he did both.
Folks, please, let's all go to neutral corners. I mean, let's all be calm.
Well, it's nice to find out I was second choice, frog face.
Second choice? You were fifth choice. And with that map of yours, you should be grateful.
Now, calm down, frog face.
What?
But at least I'm not a crook.
Crook? Quiet, you fool.
Oh, you just try and quiet me. Has anyone ever seen any product from the Abbott Chemical Corporation? Well, there is none.
She's just kidding.
Yeah, it's a great big stock promotion, and everybody gets stuck but Mr. Big. Or is it Pig?
Well, we have to be going.
Let me tell you about Boston. Oh, did he clean up there?
Get out of here. Come on.
He really took the sucker for all of it.
She must have been telling the truth.
You bet she was. That was a close call, and you have Liz to thank for it.
Yeah.
What a lucky break.
Lucky? Couldn't you see I tricked them into that admission?
Liz, are you trying to tell me you knew they were crooks?
Well, George, you had to find out sooner or later. For some time now, I've been working for the FBI.
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Palmolive Shave Creams for a smoother, more comfortable way to shave, bring you Our Miss Brooks, transcribed and starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, many people enjoy the brisk, snappy weather of the winter season. But our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, is definitely anti-cold. In fact, at the last count, she was sleeping beneath 11 woolen blankets.
I kept warm enough that way, but it posed quite a problem for my landlady. Yesterday, when she came in to wake me up, she couldn't find me. We solved that, though. Now, when I go to bed, I slip a bookmark under the bottom blanket. Last Friday at breakfast, I was complaining to Mrs. Davis about the temperature in the house.
Now take this, dear. A nice steaming cup of coffee will warm you up in no time.
Is it really hot?
Piping hot. Here's your cup.
Never mind the cup. Just pour it over me. Look, Mrs. Davis, the days aren't so bad, but last night at 11:30, my room was absolutely freezing. You could hang meat in there.
Connie, wouldn't that mess up the wallpaper? Besides, 11:30 seems awfully late for you to be up, Connie. You'd be a lot warmer if you got to bed earlier.
I would have, but I had to finish some extra typing for Mr. Conklin. Our beloved principal has never been able to keep a secretary, you know.
I know. I think it's a shame the way he takes advantage of you. This isn't school business he gives you, is it?
No, mostly personal correspondence, reports and things.
And what does Mr. Conklin give you for this work?
An occasional curt nod.
Well, if I were you, I'd refuse to do any more for him. In fact, when you bring him this batch today, you ought to put your foot down.
I tried putting my foot down before, Mrs. Davis, but it just didn't work.
Why? What did Mr. Conklin do?
He stepped on it.
Come in.
Good morning, Mr. Conklin. I brought in those papers you had me type last night.
Just put them on my desk, please.
What did you say?
Perhaps you'd hear better if you'd remove those ridiculous earmuffs.
What? Oh, these earmuffs. They must have slipped down again. It's terribly chilly in school this morning, Mr. Conklin.
Nonsense. It's just pleasantly brisk. Now, about these papers. Why, Miss Brooks, you're familiar with the rules of this institution. Why are you smoking in school?
I'm not smoking. That's my breath.
Your breath?
Yes, condensing in the pleasantly brisk air. Mr. Conklin, are you sure there's enough coal in the furnace this morning?
Well, of course. The janitor has been authorized to burn 37 lumps before noon.
But, sir, this is going to be an exceptionally cold day, and 37 lumps of coal just won't get the job done.
Perhaps you're right. I'll contact the furnace room. Hand me the phone, please.
Here you are, sir.
Osgood Conklin to maintenance. Osgood Conklin to maintenance. Fire lumps 38 and 39. Fire lumps 38 and 39. That is all. Ah, that should do it. Now let's see those papers.
Here they are, Mr. Conklin. I stayed up until 11:30 last night so I'd have them finished for you.
Well, I'm not unmindful of your labors in my behalf, and I want you to know that your efforts will not go unrewarded. In fact, because of your fine spirit of cooperation, I have selected you as the one who will be permitted to type up my new report to the Board of Education.
I'm sorry, Mr. Conklin, but teaching English is a full-time job for me, and I just can't assume any extra duties.
But somebody's got to do it. Miss Enright just turned me down, too. As a matter of fact, she's the one who suggested you for this honor.
Oh, she did she? Well, let me tell you...
You shouldn't speak harshly of your fellow English teacher, Miss Brooks. After all, Miss Enright is quite fond of you.
Fond of me?
Oh, she must be, to pass such a nice compliment about you this morning. She said she considered you one of her oldest friends.
She did?
And then she said she likes you as well as some of her younger friends. Force you to perform this trifling task for me, so you might as well run along to your classroom.
Yes, sir, but as far as Miss Enright is concerned,
careful,
I would like
careful,
to...
Careful, Miss Brooks. You're speaking of a teacher who may soon be head of the English department.
What?
The position is still open, you know, and for months now I've been grooming Miss Enright.
Good. That should make her coat nice and shiny.
Miss Brooks, are you inferring that Miss Enright is a horse?
If the shoe fits, nail it on her. Pardon me, Mr. Boynton, but I've got a free period right now, and as I recall, so have you.
Oh, that's right, Miss Brooks. Is there anything I can do for you?
I'd love to. That is, the real reason I dropped in here was to get away from my own classroom for a while. Sometimes I wonder if all this effort is worth anything. If I couldn't expend all this time and energy in another direction. Say, making a pleasant home for some man. The way any normal woman does.
Well, you're certainly normal, Miss Brooks. Your muscular structure's good. You have a well-shaped skull. Good sound bones. And judging from your complexion, I should say your systolic circulatory system is A1.
You romantic fool, you. I wish I felt as well as your description, though. I've got a little headache from all the paperwork I've been doing.
A headache? Would you like me to massage your temples a bit?
That's the quickest you've ever caught on. Please do, Mr. Boynton.
All right. How does this feel?
Just wonderful, Mr. Boynton.
Yoo-hoo, anybody in here?
Nobody but us guinea pigs.
Well, it's Miss Enright. Miss Brooks has a little headache. I'm just massaging her temples.
Oh, how humane of you.
There you go with your jokes, Miss Enright. You're just loads of fun. Don't you think so, Miss Brooks?
She's the biggest load I've ever seen.
Well, Miss Brooks, I didn't expect to find you here. I just dropped in because I'm worn out from my morning classes. Sometimes I just don't know where I get the fuel to keep running.
You didn't race your engine so much, your tank wouldn't get so low.
That's a good one, too. You girls have a lot of fun with each other, don't you?
Yes. Yes, we do enjoy our little fencing matches. When we're not too tuckered out from our work, that is. Oh, that English class of mine.
Well, I must say, I don't know what's come over you women of today. You just don't seem to have the vitality and drive of our forebears. Now, take my Aunt Mattie, for example. She taught English, but she also taught mathematics, history, science, and Latin.
5 subjects?
Certainly. And then she'd go home and keep house for her husband and 9 children.
9 children? What did she teach, night school?
You can jest if you want to. But if I found a woman like my Aunt Mattie, a woman who held the secret to diversified interests, I'd marry her tomorrow.
If you'll excuse me now, I've got 1,000,000 papers to correct.
And I'd better be running along, too. I've got to empty several waste baskets.
But ladies,
goodbye,
I...
Goodbye, Mr. Boynton.
See you later, nephew.
What is it you wanted to see me about, Miss Brooks?
It's my work here at school, Mr. Conklin. I was wondering if you could give me another subject or two to teach.
Miss Brooks, have you been sniffing too much eraser dust?
No, sir. It's just that I'd like to diversify my interests. Another class would be a labor of love.
Pardon me, Mr. Conklin. Oh,
hello, Miss Enright.
Oh, Miss Brooks. What happened to those millions of papers you had to mark?
I threw them in those wastebaskets you had to empty.
I'm rather busy this morning, Miss Enright. What's on your mind?
Well, Mr. Conklin, I've been thinking about my schedule here, and I've come to the conclusion that I could take on another subject.
You too? But not 2 hours ago, you both complained about how rigorous your duties were.
That was B.A.M., Mr. Conklin, before Aunt Mattie. You might consider it strange, sir, but
on the contrary, and it's an extremely fortuitous coincidence. I was planning to institute a course in business administration at Madison. My big problem, however, has been instructors. There are none available in this area.
There are now. I mean, there is now. I'll take a shot at it. Yes, sir. You bet. Sure thing.
Not so fast, darling. Mr. Conklin, if you're interested in a business administration course, I'd like to point out that I've got a terrific background.
That you don't have to point out. Maybe you ought to sell your bicycle.
Please, please, Miss Brooks, please. Tell me about your experience, Miss Enright.
Well, before I came to Madison High as an English teacher, I assisted Papa in his business. Papa was the head of a big collection agency at the time.
I assisted my Papa, too, Miss Enright.
What did he do?
He spent most of his time hiding from your Papa. Please, Mr. Conklin, I'll admit I'm not overly familiar with the principles of business administration, but I'll study it thoroughly in the next few days.
Miss Brooks, business administration is a 3-year course. How do you propose to learn it in a few short days?
I'll only take a half hour for lunch.
I'm afraid you have none of the qualifications for this position, Miss Brooks. Once again, it looks like Miss Enright has the inside track.
Well, all I can say is don't bet too much on her nose. It might still be a photo finish.
Colgate Dental Cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
While it cleans your teeth.
Colgate toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
While it cleans your teeth.
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
Yes, the Colgate way is the most thoroughly proved and accepted home method of oral hygiene known today. Over 2 years' research showed brushing teeth right after eating with Colgate Dental Cream helps stop more decay for more people than ever before reported in dentifrice history. The Colgate way stopped tooth decay best.
No other dentifrice, ammoniated or not, offers such conclusive proof. And you should know that Colgate's, while not mentioned by name, was the only toothpaste used in the research on tooth decay recently reported in Reader's Digest.
So always follow the Colgate way to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. And stop tooth decay best.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream. It cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
Why, it cleans your teeth.
And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
Well, Mr. Conklin seemed convinced that I didn't know a thing about business administration, and it looked like he was right. I had just about given up on the biggest deal of my life, 200 pounds of prime biology teacher. When lunch period came, I must have looked pretty down in the mouth as I entered the school cafeteria.
Get it up, Miss Brooks. Your chin is sweeping the floor.
Oh, hello, Walter. I do feel a bit grim today.
Well, suppose you sit down over here and tell our favorite pupil all about it. That is, unless you're waiting for Mr. Boynton.
No, he had to go down to the biology supply house. They're having a sale on used guinea pigs or something.
Well, it shouldn't make you this depressed. Gosh, you look like you're just about to bawl. What's the cause of it?
Well, I spent about 10 minutes in Mr. Conklin's office this morning.
Say no more. Here's my hanky. Mr. Conklin, the best cure I know for anybody who's got a slight case of cheerfulness.
Not so loud, Walter. His daughter's about to join us.
Hello, Miss Brooks. Walter.
Hello, Harriet.
We were just chatting about your daddy.
Yeah. Why isn't he in the cafeteria today?
I brought a sandwich to his office. He's calling the various oil companies to see if he can't beat the price raise. It seems fuel oil for our furnace at home has gone up 3 cents a gallon. Daddy has a big problem with oil every winter.
We have a big problem with Daddy every winter. You probably don't know anything about this, Harriet, but I've been hoping your father would appoint me as instructor in business administration.
He did mention something about the course, Miss Brooks, but he hasn't said who's going to teach it, so you might as well keep hoping. I'm going to get myself some dessert. Can I bring you something, Miss Brooks?
No, thanks, dear. I'm pretty full. I've been biting my lips all morning.
Watch out, Miss Brooks. Things could always be worse. See you later, Walter.
Okay, Pigeon. Now then, Miss Brooks, give me your undivided attention.
You've got it, Walter.
While you and Harriet were yakking it up, I was thinking, if Mr. Conklin could get the oil he wants for his furnace not only 3 cents cheaper, but 9 cents below the current price, and if this transaction was put over by you, he'd consider that you had a pretty good business head on your shoulders.
Well, I guess he would be.
Instead of thinking what he thinks now, that it's just a bunch of pretty auburn hair clinging to a vacant bulb.
Now, just a minute, Walter.
Please, I'm not finished. It so happens that my dad has a good pal in the Ajax Oil Company, and we get all our fuel wholesale. Now, there's no reason why I can't get some for you to give to Mr. Conklin, thus helping you wrap up the job you want.
Walter, I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize here and now for everything I've ever thought about you. This is a great idea.
Thank you. We'll get the oil to Mr. Conklin's home right after school. But there's one question I'd like to ask you, Miss Brooks. Why are you so anxious to take on the added duties of another course?
I can answer that in two simple words, Walter. Philip Boynton.
I'm glad you got home from school early today, Daddy. But why did we come down here to the basement?
I wanted to show you our new furnace, Harriet. It was installed just 10 minutes ago.
But what's this pink ribbon tied on it for? And what's this card on top of it?
It's a little surprise for your mother. Read the card, Harriet.
Let's see. It says, "To my loving wife, Martha, happy Lincoln's birthday, darling, from your Osgood." You bought Mother a furnace for Lincoln's birthday?
Nothing's too good for your mother, Harriet. Besides, it's my way of making up for Christmas. I got the feeling that your mother was not too delighted with the gift she received from me at that time.
I can't understand it. It was a lovely case of club soda. But, Daddy, Mother was expecting a fur coat this winter.
Then she should be doubly pleased. A furnace is even warmer than a fur coat. Especially this brand new forced air furnace. It uses gas and a blower system. And all it requires is for me to flip open a vent and presto, any room I'm in is full of hot air.
No comment, Daddy.
That oil drum, Walter. I don't want Mr. Conklin to know we're in his basement.
Well, I still don't see why we didn't just roll the drum up to his front door.
Because I want to surprise him. We'll pour the oil right into the furnace. Then, when he can't understand how he's getting heat without having bought any oil, I'll flash this bill from the Ajax Company showing that I've beaten the current price by 9 cents.
I get it. And then when Mr. Conklin reacts according to plan, he'll put you in charge of the business administration course. Mr. Boynton will admire your energy and diversified talents. And before you know it, you'll be married and have 9 children like his Aunt Maddie.
Walter, have you been drinking this oil?
Miss Enright, your coming to my home on your own time to discuss our new business administration course has made
quite an impression on me.
Thank you, Mr. Conklin. But I've always been a firm believer in the old adage, don't put off until tomorrow what you can do today.
My sentiments exactly. Now, if you'll just give me your coat, we'll sit down in the living room and chat for a while.
Oh, I think I'll keep my coat on, Mr. Conklin. I feel a bit chilly.
Oh, as you wish. Mrs. Conklin is out shopping at the moment, but when she comes back, she'll fix a bit of tea for us. I can't wait to see her face when she discovers her gift.
Oh? What did you buy for Mrs. Conklin?
In honor of Lincoln's birthday, I bought her a brand new furnace. I haven't used it as yet, but I think I'll turn it on right now. Excuse me, Miss Enright. I'll see who's at the door. Oh, it's you, Miss Brooks.
Yes, sir. I came by to discuss that new teaching job.
But I've just about decided on Miss Enright for that position, Miss Brooks.
Please, sir, what I have to tell you may change that decision. I'll just take a few moments of your time.
Very well, then. Come in. Now, please be brief, Miss Brooks. Miss Enright and I have many matters to discuss.
Yes, sir. Oh, hello, Miss Enright.
Hello, Miss Brooks. Did you come by to show me what a good loser you are?
I'll deal with you when you slither into school tomorrow. Right now, I've got some business with Mr. Conklin. You see, sir, I've always been a firm believer in the old adage, don't put off until tomorrow what you can do today.
A salty cliché, if I ever heard one. Please come to the point.
Yes, sir. Mr. Conklin, what would you say if I told you that I was going to put $8.95 into your pocket this minute?
I'd say sit down, Miss Brooks.
Mr. Conklin, I'm going to put $8.95 into your pocket this minute.
Sit down, Miss Brooks.
Thank you. Now, in this transaction...
Pardon me, but isn't it awfully chilly in here?
For once, we're on the same side. It might be a very jolly thought to turn on your furnace, Mr. Conklin, and burn some nice cheap oil.
I don't have any oil in my furnace. However, if you ladies are cold, I should be happy
Excuse me, Daddy, but I've got to talk to Miss Brooks privately right away. Will you kindly step out into the hall with me, Miss Brooks?
Harriet, you know my house rules about disturbing adult conversations?
It's terribly personal, Daddy, and it'll just take a second.
Sounds important, Harriet. I'll be right back, Mr. Conklin. Meanwhile, I'm sure Miss Enright can regale you with some brilliant yakety-yak.
It's happened, Miss Brooks. Daddy's done the worst possible thing that could happen.
He signed on for another year at Madison High?
No, he bought Mother a furnace for a Lincoln's birthday gift.
He must have gotten his rebate on the club soda bottles.
You don't understand. I just saw Walter Denton in the basement. He was washing his hands in the sink down there.
Sounds like a reasonable place.
He told me you put oil in the furnace.
That's right, to surprise your father.
You'll surprise him, all right. He bought a gas-operated forced air furnace.
What? Oh, this is terrible. We've got to work fast, Harriet. You run down to the basement and tell Walter to get some tubing and siphon that oil out of the furnace at once.
Okay, Miss Brooks. And you go on in and keep Daddy's mind occupied so he doesn't turn it on until I come back with the all clear.
All right, Harriet. Now, for heaven's sakes, hurry.
I'm dashing this minute. Good luck, Miss Brooks.
I'll need it.
Well, Miss Brooks, has my daughter concluded her personal business with you?
Yes, sir. It was nothing, really.
Now then, about this business transaction of yours.
Boy, it's sure hot in here.
Hot?
I'm terribly warm.
Do your lips always turn blue when you're warm? I'm still shivering, Mr. Conklin.
Well, I've got high blood pressure, so I'm usually warmer than the average person, but I'll turn the heat up if you want me to, Miss Enright.
No! I mean, why turn on the heat? Too much heat isn't... Ouch! Healthy.
Bless you, darling.
I must have sat in a hot draft. Now, about the $8.95 I saved you, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, excuse me one moment. I'm going to see if my new thermostat is accurate. I want everything to be just right when Mrs. Conklin comes home. First, I'll open the large vent in this wall. Now, we'll just set this thermostat for 76 degrees. That should get the furnace going rather quickly.
Oh, it can't warm up quickly enough for me.
It can for me. Excuse me, Mr. Conklin.
Where are you going, Miss Brooks?
Into the coat closet. I have a roll of film that needs developing.
Oh, stop that idiotic jabber and let's get down to cases now.
Perhaps we should set the thermostat up to 80 or so. Then the furnace will really get going. Here, I'll do it.
But, Miss Enright,
It's all right, Miss Brooks. I want to see how the new furnace reacts. Here, I'll turn it up to 85 degrees. Ah, yeah, now it's starting. Listen to the lovely sound of that nice hot air scurrying up the pipe.
I'll turn it off. Oh.
Oh, my suit.
Oh, my dress.
Oh, my neck.
What happened to my brand new furnace? This entire room is full of oil. What do we do?
Well, we could toss a giant salad. But I guess the only practical suggestion is to clean it up.
Something must have gone wrong when I... Holy cow! What are you people doing in here? Rehearsing for a minstrel show?
You guessed it, Walter. And I don't know about anybody else, but if the interlocutor will excuse me, I, for one, am going to pick up my tambourine and beat it.
Just a moment. But first, men, does your face do a slow burn every time you shave? Then it's time you heard the good news about smoother, more comfortable shaves the Palmolive Shaving Cream way. That's right, smoother, more comfortable shaves. And men, only Palmolive, no other shaving cream, offers you real proof, not just promises, of smoother, more comfortable shaves. For the new Palmolive Shaving Cream way gets beards really soft, and it provides a protective film that actually floats your razor's cutting edge. Yes, even in cold or hard water, you get a clean, close shave every time. Super smooth, super comfortable. Over 2,500 men tested Palmolive shaving creams thoroughly. They followed the simple directions on the tube, and no matter how they shaved before, 3 out of 4 reported beards easier to cut, less razor pull, more comfortable, actually smoother shaves. Get Palmolive shaving cream, lather, or brushless. See if you don't get that super smooth, super comfortable, free and easy shave you've always wanted. You owe it to your face to try Palmolive lather or brushless. Remember, only Palmolive, no other shaving cream, offers you proof of smoother, more comfortable shaves. And now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, Walter Denton was just about to spill the beans to Mr. Conklin about my part in the great oil scandal, when luckily I managed to catch his eye. And through some magical current that seemed to flow between us, his lips were suddenly sealed. Then I took my knuckles out of his mouth, and we cleaned up the living room. After that, Walter took me home, and when we got to the door, he said...
Gosh, Miss Brooks, do you think you may still get a crack at that business administration course?
I don't know about the business administration, Walter, but if he finds out about today, it's a cinch we'll both get the business.
This is Burns Press reminding you to tune in next week to another Our Miss Brooks show, brought to you by Palmolive Shave Creams for a smoother, more comfortable way to shave, and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis, with the music of Wilbur Hatch. Ladies, now with new improved Vel, V-E-L, you can save 90% of dishwashing work.
Just soak dishes in Vel suds a while. Dishes and glassware will soak sparkling clean. No washing, no wiping, no scouring with Vel. Only the stickiest dishes need just the touch of a cloth. Rinse, and they'll gleam without wiping.
Soak pots and pans in Vel suds, too. And most of them will get shiny clean without scouring.
What's more, Vel is extra mild to hands. So get new Vel. Save 90% of dishwashing work.
Be sure to listen to Mr. and Mrs. North every Tuesday night on this same station, and be with us again next week at the same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. This program was transcribed. Stay tuned now for Jack Benny.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
This is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College.
And now, the Halls of Ivy.
We love the Halls of Ivy that surround us here today.
Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. When the endowments lag behind, boards of governors are quite justified in trimming their sails to the prevailing financial zephyrs, which is what Ivy's governing board did at a budget meeting last night, as a result of which Dr. William Todhunter Hall, president of Ivy, has come down to breakfast in what, for him, is a black mood. As he says to his beautiful wife, Victoria, who has a community property approach to her husband's moods...
I'd like another cup of coffee, please, Victoria. It might possibly serve to take the taste of last evening's fiasco out of my mind. I'm not against economy, mind you, but penny-pinching gets us nothing but bruised fingers.
I'm sorry I was asleep when you got home last night, dear. I take it the budget meeting didn't go your way, huh?
Went Mr. Wellman's way for the most part. And Mr. Wellman, however charitable he may be as a private citizen, is, as chairman of the Board of Governors, a veritable miser. I'd be curious to know how his manicurist could work on such a tight-fisted customer. The cream, please, my love.
Yes, here you are. Sugar?
Yes, sugar, syrup, saccharine, anything. I crave sweetness this morning.
And what did our spendthrift Clarence do as watchdog of the treasury? Fight the mailman?
Oh, our Clarence, in a fit of obstinacy and parsimony, spearheaded a move to cut $2,000 from the appropriation of the college study. Perhaps pinheaded is a better word. Yes, yes, he pinheaded the movement.
And who would be better equipped?
I'll fight to Ivy's last check stub any expenditure which I consider unjustified. I deplore the wasteful... What did I do with my napkin?
Your napkin is that piece of twisted linen you're waving in your left hand.
Oh, darling. Yes.
Yeah, well, don't worry about it. I only hope your problem can be ironed out as easily.
I hope so, too.
But isn't the college study a special branch of the main library?
Yes, books of reference, special research material, rare and valuable volumes. And penalties for their late return are drastic. There's a long list of greatly needed books for this section, which, failing a new appropriation, we must do without.
Or was yours the only protesting voice? Where was Mr. Merriweather? He'd be on your side if you asked for $6 million to start a seminar in safe-cracking.
Well, unfortunately, Mr. Merriweather was not present.
Oh.
No, he phoned that he was laid up with a dislocated vertebra, sustained in Asheville, North Carolina, while trying to blast a golf ball out of a sand trap with a 25-cent bet on the outcome. He told the board not to annoy him with budget problems, as he had, in his own words, just broken his back trying to save two bits.
Poor Mr. Merriweather. If he'd known how much you needed him, he'd have come to the meeting on a stretcher.
I know he would, but as it was, the board seems to have been spellbound by Mr. Wellman's anguished pleas for economy. His eloquence is nothing short of inspired when it concerns money. Had money instead of heresy been the issue, he could have saved Joan of Arc from burning. For money, he could have had Sitting Bull playing beanbag with Custer in the Seventh Cavalry.
I've heard of people talking through their hats, and Mr. Wellman talks through his pocket. In fact, I've... Oh, well, Louisa's out shopping, Toddy. Shall I answer it?
No, I'll do it. And I hope it is, Mr. Wellman. I'm in exactly the proper mood to... Dr. Hall's residence? Who did you say... Oh, Mr. Lundquist. Yes, I feel as badly about it as you do. Oh, I'm afraid it's irrevocable. The budget has been officially passed. Oh, yes, Mr. Lundquist, please do. Maybe between us we can find a solution. Yes, yes, I'll be waiting. Goodbye.
Mr. Lundquist, you mean the little man in the library?
Yes, dear.
He's so small, I always think of him as an abridged, I should say, bookman.
Yeah, well, he's been the librarian for the college study for 20 years or more. His right forefinger is spatulate. Due to marking his place in books while talking to people.
Oh, yeah. He has a sort of friendly puppy air, as if he was waiting to have his tummy scratched. Is he on his way over here?
Yes, he is. He's hoping, in vain, I'm afraid, that we might concoct some miracle of persuasion to get the board to allot him $2,000.
Well, it doesn't seem like much money when you think of new gymnasiums and things like that. Oh, Toddy, wouldn't it be just too grand if you could think of something?
Too grand? Is that a joke, my love?
Why? What's funny about it?
Well, I just wondered, $2,000, too grand.
Huh?
Let it go, darling. It's just that I'm never quite sure to what extent you have absorbed American slang.
Oh, I don't try anymore. I can't keep up with it. You know, I told Mrs. Quinclannon once that I had only $3 worth of mazuma in my purse, and she looked at me as if I was the village idiot.
Well, slang itself, while it is occasionally sharp and graphic beyond the powers of conservative expression, too often indicates a paucity of conversational resources.
You said it.
Thanks, a stack.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome, a heap.
Yes, dear. And now that we have disposed of slang,
yes.
The slum area of the language, where were we?
Mr. Lundquist, the librarian.
Oh,
you
yes,
said he was
yes.
coming over to see if the two of you couldn't wheedle $2,000 out of Mr. Wellman.
Well, wheedling money out of Mr. Wellman in his official capacity is somewhat akin to coaxing hemoglobin out of a rutabaga. Incidentally, I think you'll like Mr. Lundquist. He's a gentleman. A word defined in various ways, but never better than it defines itself. He is a gentleman.
Well, you should know, Governor. Takes a gent to know a gent, I always say. And if the likes of you likes the likes of him, well, it's no skin off my nose, see? Charlie, do you remember?
Remember what, my love?
Why, that little costermonger in Covent Garden.
The little coster? Mm. Oh, yes. Yes, of course I do. Yes, I bought you some roast chestnuts from him.
Roast chestnuts. Ah, didn't they smell wonderful?
Weren't they nice and hot?
Yeah, didn't they taste awful? Do you remember the little boy we finally gave them to outside St. Paul's Cathedral?
Yes, the little muddler.
Yes.
Ah, Vicky, that was one of my happiest memories of London. The day you first took me to St. Paul's.
One of mine, too. But then seeing things with you was always like looking through a newly washed window. Fresh and exciting. You remember how cool it felt in the cathedral after that very warm day. Right there, William. That is. The plain black slab. Sir Christopher Wren's tomb.
Ah, just think of it. Buried in his own cathedral. Christopher Wren wrote poetry in stone with more grace than most men with ink and quill. Great architect, astronomer, physician, mathematician, inventor, as versatile a genius as Leonardo da Vinci himself.
Yes. Look, there's the inscription.
Yes. Reader, if you seek his monument, look around you.
But it's in Latin, and you're not even looking at it.
Oh, I know it by heart. Besides, I'd rather look at you.
Oh, William. Come this way, to the Whispering Gallery. Up here. Look. See down there? There's the Duke of Wellington.
Yes, and next to him, Lord Nelson. England is grateful for its heroes, just as I am grateful to England for you.
Oh, William, I'm just Victoria Cromwell, not Oliver.
Nevertheless, you have the beauty which Christopher Wren envisioned. And if you'll only marry me, the courage of Nelson and Wellington.
It doesn't take any courage to surrender. But look, here's the whispering gallery. I'll stay right here. You walk round to the other side, over there, and whisper to me.
Whisper? From 100 feet away?
Oh, 108 feet, the book says. Go on, try it.
Very well, and I hope it's as far as we shall ever be separated. Victoria and Victoria loves William.
But, Toddy, Mr. Lundquist has arrived.
Lundquist? Lundquist? What's he doing? Oh, yes, Lundquist. Yes. Ah, good morning, Mr. Lundquist.
Good morning, Dr. Hall. Hello, Mrs. Hall.
It's nice to see you again, Mr. Lundquist.
Won't you sit down?
Can I get you some coffee?
No, thank you. I can stay just a moment. Is it really a lost cause, Dr. Hall? Have we exhausted every possibility?
Well...
Maybe if we poll the individual members of the board and explain how necessary it is that we have this money. What a blow it is to our prestige.
Yes, I feel as badly as you do. But short of blackmailing the board members, I can see no way out.
Blackmail? I find myself rather handicapped in practicing blackmail, Dr. Hall. I know nothing bad about anybody.
Oh, well, maybe you can remember something good about somebody that they're ashamed of.
No, I'm afraid I couldn't lend myself to extortion, Mrs. Hall, even in this cause.
Have you any ideas yourself, Mr. Lundquist?
None. But the books have to pay for themselves somehow. We could possibly increase the systems of fines and penalties, but they're already pretty steep.
Fines and penalties, eh? Tell me, Mr. Lundquist, how far back do the records of the library study go?
Good heavens, long before my time, and I've been librarian for 24 years. We must have records covering 35 years at least. What did you have in mind, Dr. Hall?
Well, nothing specific, I'm afraid.
But he has one of those open minds that things can get into.
I've often found that we can get a new slant from old transactions. Come, Mr. Lundquist, let's go over to the library. I'd like to go through the old records. Who knows? Out of the worthless past, we may win a valuable present.
America is bringing you this presentation of The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. As we return to The Halls of Ivy, Dr. Hall is just entering the house after a perusal of the records in the library study. His wife, Victoria, takes one look at his smiling face and says...
Oh, look at my beamish boy. You found something.
Your beamish boy did indeed, my darling. He returns laden down with metaphorical apples, peaches, pears, plums, pomegranates, pineapples, and prunes.
You mean it was a fruitful visit?
Fruitful is the word.
Yes.
Although the effect on one of my fruit stand customers will be that of the green persimmon.
If you mean Mr. Wellman, and I hope you do, he always looks as though he'd just finished eating one anyway. What did you find?
Well, I found, I think, the chink in the armor. But to make the affair worthwhile from a standpoint of official action and personal gratification, I shall require the services of Mr. Francis X. Grogan, the campus cop. Has he been here yet?
No, not yet. Matter of fact, I haven't seen Mr. Grogan for months. Testimony, I suppose, to my law-abiding life. Is he going to pinch somebody for you?
No, I'm just using Grogan as a symbol of law and order. The mace of authority and the whip of power. Grogan, as you know,
Oops,
is one...
Triggers, the cops.
Fear not, my love. I'll explain that while you did steal my heart, it was not larceny, but a fair exchange.
Wait a minute, Louisa. What's your night off? Who asked you for a date? I just want to keep a good watch on the house when the help's away. Okay, okay.
So much for romance.
Yeah, he seems to have been arrested and without a warrant. Yes. But that's it. Oh, hello, Mr. Grogan.
Hello, Officer Grogan. Come on in.
Hi, Mrs. Doyle. Hello, Doc. I got the word you want me for something special. Home do I shoot.
No, it isn't quite that special, Grogan. I merely want you, in your official capacity, in full uniform and badge, to enforce a certain regulation.
Uniform's a cinch, Doc, because my official costume is my entire wardrobe. With a school furnishing the best quality of broadcloth, wouldn't I be a marblehead to go out and make like a civilian at $75 a suit? Nope, always in uniform. That's me. Thereby getting a reputation of good old Grogan always on duty.
Well, I wish you boys would get down to business. I want to know what regulation Officer Grogan is going to enforce and against whom.
Don't matter whom against, Mrs. Hall. Grogan treats him all the same. Big potatoes, little potatoes, no fear, no favor. Regulations is regulation. I'm here to see that they get enforced, and all you got to do is brief me. Point me the way to go, and with no regards for personal danger or political influence. Who'd you say it was, Doc?
Mr. Clarence Wellman.
Clarence Wellman. I'll go right over and pick... Oh, no! Oh, no, Doc. Oh, please, not him. Oh, not the chairman of the board.
No fear, no favor, Mr. Grogan, remember?
Oh.
Do I understand, Francis Xavier Grogan, that you, the representative of law and order on this campus...
I know, but Wellman, he ain't a student. He ain't on the campus. He's out of my jurisdiction. He's out of my territory.
Do I understand that you, a sworn officer of the peace, do willfully and deliberately refuse to accept an assignment which falls within the normal scope of your position, thus violating the sacred terms of your employment, which read in part, and I quote, Cresit iundo, de mortuis nil nisi bonum, chef de cuisine, errare humanum est, and omnia gallia est in partes tres divisa.
You got me, Doc. I didn't read the small print. I never knowed what I was signing.
Well, it must have been a very interesting oath of office. I like that chef de cuisine touch. So what's cooking?
Okay. What do I pinch Mr. Wellman for, Doc?
Oh, it won't be necessary to arrest or incarcerate him, Grogan. I just want you to collect this bill.
Oh.
It seems that some years ago, Mr. Wellman withdrew a reference book from the college study and did not return it, knowing full well the fines and penalties accruing to such a malfeasance.
Oh, well, it was just to collect a couple of bucks, and I'm the guy that... What? $1,999.65 for what?
Well, Mr. Wellman must have borrowed Dr. Elliot's 5-foot shelf.
Tell Mr. Wellman the book must be returned also, or the price of replacement will be added to the bill.
Hey, look, Doc, you sure you don't want I should kick his dog or install his mother or bust a few windows as you...
No, don't worry, Grogan. This is a legal bill. It is my duty to send it, yours to collect it, and Mr. Wellman's to pay it. Now, thank you, officer, and Godspeed.
Okay, Doc. Mine is not the reason why. Mine's just to go sit down and cry.
Hey, darling, you don't think Mr. Wellman will be so angry he'll resort to violence against Francis X?
No, obviously, my love. You have never seen Grogan in action. He's not a large man, but I have seen him bounce an exuberant halfback around with one hand, strangle an obstinate weightlifter with the other, while directing a house mother to chapel for pre-Easter services. No. Don't worry about Grogan.
I wonder what's happening. He's had time now to make Mr. Wellman count out $2,000 in pennies.
Yes, my eye is on the telephone and my ear is on the doorbell. I think that at any moment...
One guess.
Too easy. Come in, Mr. Wellman.
Dr. Hall, this is an outrage. This is the most ridiculous, undignified, badly. Good evening, Mrs. Hall.
Isn't it, though?
Won't you be seated, Mr. Wellman?
I should say not, to accept the hospitality of a person who... Well, I must say that digging up an old account and sending a policeman, a campus cop, to collect from the chairman of the board of governors, and $2,000! Are you out of your mind, Dr. Hall?
Why, Mr. Wellman?
What do you mean, why? Are you serious in expecting to collect it? I mean, expecting to collect a forgotten old account that after all... 31 years is... Well, of all, a fantastic idiot. And besides, Bill, that old is outlaw, Dr. Law. Outlaw. Understand? Uncollective. Non-collective. Anti-collective. You can't do it.
Maybe somebody forged your name at the library, Mr. Wellman. Maybe you never even borrowed the book.
Of course I borrowed the book, but good heavens, just because I absolutely mindedly does that justify sending a policeman to my home?
Mr. Wellman.
What is it, Dr. Hall?
You did borrow the book?
I just said I did.
You never returned the book?
Evidently not, but my goodness, a slight oversight like that.
You have never paid the legitimate fine for an overdue book?
Well, I...
Or paid for the book?
No, I did not, but after 31 years, does it matter so much?
Mr. Wellman, do I understand that you repudiate the debt?
Well, now, that's a pretty nasty thing to say, Doctor.
It's a pretty nasty thing to do, Mr. Wellman. Sometimes referred to as welshing.
I told you it was outlawed 31 years.
Imagine having a thing like that on your conscience for 31 years.
I didn't have any conscience. I mean, it wasn't on it. The book. I mean, I'd forgotten all about the silly old...
Well, let's forget all about it, Mr. Wellman. Let's just consider the incident closed.
All right, but... Oh, well, fine. That's very handsome of you, Dr. Hall. Thank you.
I'll just report that $2,000, which the college study needs so badly, is uncollectible. Naturally, the accountants who will audit the library next month will have to make public all shortages with the names of the debtors.
For 31 years back?
From the very beginning, Mr. Wellman.
Looked pretty bad, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would, Mr. Wellman. The chairman of the Board of Governors, the watchdog of the Treasury, refusing to okay $2,000 for the library when he himself owed it almost the same amount. Well, when that reporter called this afternoon...
Reporter? You mean the newspapers? Oh, no, they wouldn't dare. Would they?
It might make quite an amusing story. You know, between the football and baseball seasons, they have to fill space some way.
Look, how about half? $1,000. That's fair, isn't it?
Oh. My dear Mr. Wellman, if you're so hard-pressed that another $1,000 will... Vicky, get my checkbook, will you? I'll pay the other half of Mr. Wellman's bill.
Oh, no, you don't. I pay my own bills, and I am not hard-pressed. I was merely standing on a principle of...
On what principle were you standing, Mr. Wellman?
Freedom of speech... the right of every man to... I mean... Oh, okay, I give up. I'll mail the college study my check in the morning, Dr. Hall.
Oh, can't you write it now, Mr. Wellman?
Here's a blank check, Mr. Wellman.
Thank you, Vicky.
It's a little tear-stained, but that happened when I thought you were going to have to write one for $1,000.
You don't trust me, Dr. Hall?
Well, any man who forgets a book for 31 years can certainly forget a check in 12 hours, Mr. Wellman. Simple logic.
Here, use my pen.
There you are. I added $3, price of the book. And remind me to do something about that fellow Grogan.
Oh, he was just obeying orders, Mr. Wellman. You can't...
Of course he was. And anybody with the nerve to bang on my door and try to collect $2,000 takes what it's got. I mean, he's got what it takes. We need men like him. Courage, integrity, grit. Good night.
Vicky, did you say a reporter called today about this matter?
Oh, no. She wanted the guest list for Mrs. Quincannon's tea next Friday.
Well, that was what finally built the fire under Clarence Wellman. He saw himself smeared in headlines from Maine to Mexico as Wellman the Welsher.
Well, anyway, you beat him again.
Oh, no, my love, he beat himself. In this case, he was defeated by his own conscience.
After you'd prodded it.
Nevertheless, it was there to be prodded. Although I doubt if Mr. Wellman ever saw the little rule of life found written in George Washington's copybook, labor to keep alive in your breast that little spark of celestial fire, conscience.
Thank you.
on your side if you asked for $6 million to start a seminar in safe cracking.
Well, unfortunately, Mr. Merriweather was not present.
Oh.
No, he phoned, but he was laid up with a dislocated vertebra. Sustained in Asheville, North Carolina, while trying to blast a golf ball out of a sand trap with a 25-cent bet on the outcome. He told the board not to annoy him with budget problems, as he had, in his own words, just broken his back trying to save two bits.
Oh, yeah. Poor Mr. Merriweather. If he'd known how much you needed him, he'd have come to the meeting on a stretcher.
I know he would. But as it was, the board seems to have been spellbound by Mr. Wellman's anguished pleas for economy. His eloquence is nothing short of inspired when it concerns money. Had money instead of heresy been the issue, he could have saved Joan of Arc from burning. For money, he could have had Sitting Bull playing beanbag with Custer in the Seventh Cavalry.
I've heard of people talking through their hats, so Mr. Wellman talks through his pocket. In fact, I've... Oh, well, Louise is out shopping, Toddy. Shall I answer it?
No, darling, I'll do it. And I hope it is, Mr. Wellman. I'm in exactly the proper mood to... Dr. Hall's residence? Who did you say? Oh, Mr. Lundquist. Yes, I feel as badly about it as you do. No, I'm afraid it's irrevocable. The budget has been officially passed.
I take it the budget meeting didn't go your way, huh?
Went Mr. Wellman's way for the most part. And Mr. Wellman, however charitable he may be as a private citizen, is, as chairman of the Board of Governors, a veritable miser. I'd be curious to know how his manicurist could work on such a tight-fisted customer. The cream, please, my love.
Yes, here you are, sugar.
Yes, yeah, sugar, syrup, saccharine, anything. I crave sweetness this morning.
Ah. And what did our spendthrift Clarence do as watchdog of the treasury? Fight the mailman?
Oh, our Clarence, in a fit of obstinacy and parsimony, spearheaded a move to cut $2,000 from the appropriation of the college study. Perhaps pinheaded is a better word. Yes, he pinheaded the movement.
And who would be better equipped?
I'll fight to Ivy's last check stub any expenditure which I consider unjustified. I deplore the wasteful... What did I do with my napkin?
Your napkin is that piece of twisted linen you're waving in your left hand.
Oh, darling. Yes.
Yeah, well, don't worry about it. I only hope your problem can be ironed out as easily.
I hope so, too.
But isn't the college study a special branch of the main library?
Yes, books of reference, special research material, rare and valuable volumes. And penalties for their late return are drastic. There's a long list of greatly needed books for this section, which, failing a new appropriation, we must do without.
Or was yours the only protesting voice? Where was Mr. Merriweather?
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is grass. G-R-A-S-S.
Really?
You bet your life! The more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
That's me, Groucho Marx. Well, here I am again with $1,000 for one of our couples. George Fenneman, who's first to try for it?
Well, we asked if there were any young people present tonight who'd like to get married if they found the right partner.
I see.
And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Christine Carson and Dan Metzger. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids, for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers, and if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. Christine Carson and Dan Metzger. Miss Christine Carson. Shall I call you Christine, or do you have a nickname?
Well, everybody calls me Chris, and then Mother used to call me Ouija.
Where are you from, Ouija? We get familiar very quickly. It's about as far as I get with my familiarity, but at least it's a step in the wrong direction. Where are you from, Ouija?
Didn't I
say that a minute ago? I'm even bored with myself, and the show hasn't even started yet. Which one is Weege? I forgot. Yeah. Well, every time I holler Weege, you throw your hand up. Now, where are you from?
I'm from Oakland, California.
Oakland, huh? Dan Metzger, huh? What's your nickname, Dan?
Well, some call me Dan, Danny, or I have friends that call me Daniel Boone.
How close do you know these people, huh? And where are you from, Dan?
Melford, Saskatchewan, Canada. Oh.
Somebody out there from Port Jervis. How old are you, Mr. Boone?
30 years old.
30 years old. Well, that's a ripe old age. And Ouija, what is your age?
I'm 23.
23, eh? Well, you're a mighty attractive-looking girl, huh?
Thank you.
Fenneman says you'd like to get married if you found the right partner. Is that right, Ouija?
Yes, I would.
Well, that's a very worthy objective, eh? And I hope you take your objective, eh? Mr. Boone, would you like to get married?
Eventually, yes.
Well, that's a sneaky answer if I ever heard it. What do you mean? What's your reason? Or have you completely lost your reason?
Well, I would. After all, we all like the things that go with married life. We all like to settle down, have a darling little wife and children, what have you.
Are you asking me or telling me? What did you say? You'd like to have a family, is that it?
Sure.
Well, is there any particular family that you crave? I mean? I must say that you're the most reluctant bridegroom I've met this year. Maybe I'll have more luck with Ouija here. Who do you work for, Christine?
Arthur Murray.
Oh, is that so? I've known Arthur Murray for 40 years. He makes the best chop suey on 7th Avenue. How long have you worked in that hash house? Well, that chop house, I guess.
That's the wrong Murray. I work for the one who teaches dancing.
Oh, well, as you're crazy about type sickery, and I'm crazy about chop suey. However, we can still be friends. Dan, where do you work?
I'm an instructor with the Hollywood boarding stable, riding stable.
Oh, well, maybe I can marry you to Christine before the night's over. At least you're sort of a groom already, aren't you? What do you do at Arthur Murray's, Christine?
I teach dancing.
Could you teach me to dance?
Well, of course.
What makes you so sure, you know? Others have tried and failed.
Well, Mr. Murray has a very wonderful system, and in 35 years, there have only been 3 people that he couldn't teach to dance.
And who were they?
They were idiots.
Anyone for shuffleboard? Christine, suppose I wanted to become a social sensation overnight and I decided to take some lessons from Mr. Murray. Now, I come slinking into your studio. What happens?
Well, you're greeted by a woman interviewer and you're taken on a tour of the studio. You're taken into a private room where the...
In a private room, eh?
Yes, so that the analysis can be made so that she can study your character and your dancing.
Well, she may not learn much about my dancing, but she'll learn a lot about my character. And what next?
Well, then after the complete analysis has been made, you would be turned over to an instructor.
The police, probably, huh? Now, what'd you say?
I said you would be turned over to me.
Oh, now you're talking, huh? Well, it took a long time to get around to that, but it was certainly worth it. What are you going to teach me?
Well, first I'd have to teach you how to hold a girl.
You're kidding, aren't you? Well, now, Dan, let's get back to your stable. Suppose I wanted you to teach me to ride. Where do we begin?
Well, we begin with the reins.
Can we get an umbrella with this lesson? Or... Okay, I know all about the reins. What next?
Well, you take the reins in your left hand, grasp the saddle with your right, put your left foot in the left stirrup, and then throw yourself all the way over.
Am I on the horse now?
Well, you're supposed to be, yes.
That's what you think. I'm on the other side of the horse, flat on my face. Now, Dan, what do you do? What do you look for in a good riding horse?
Well, the first thing I look for is a pair of beautiful eyes. Nice long mane, curvaceous neck, nice teeth.
Kiss me, you fool. Christine, I think he's proposing. Well, I think you make a lovely couple, and I think you're going to be very happy as you ride through life together waltzing on that horse. Now, in just a minute, you're going to work together for a chance at $1,000. But right now, I want you to pay close attention to Fenneman.
The word reliability is mighty important. And it's a mighty important word to your DeSoto Plymouth dealer, too. For whenever you need service for your car, your DeSoto Plymouth dealer wants to make sure you get reliable service. And as car owners from coast to coast know, your DeSoto Plymouth dealer also handles two really great cars, the brilliant DeSoto and the beautiful Plymouth. When you own a DeSoto, you'll enjoy the pleasure of driving without shifting. You'll thrill to the ease of DeSoto's feather-touch steering. And you'll experience the feeling of greater security when you bring the DeSoto to a stop. No car in America has bigger brakes. Yes, for a smooth-riding car that's economical to operate, DeSoto is the car to buy. So drive a DeSoto before you decide. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Look for those two great names linked together. DeSoto, Plymouth.
Now you're going to play your Bet Your Life for $1,000. Fenneman, tell them the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that $20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $1,000 DeSoto Plymouth question at the end of the show. You see, our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's going on out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected farm animals and birds as your category. Here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
Five.
$5, all right. What kind of a farm animal is a Hereford? H-E-R-E-F-O-R-D.
That's a cow.
That certainly is, huh?
That's right, it's a cow. And they're on their way with $25?
All right, you're on your way with $25. Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 25 will you risk?
10.
Let's try 15.
15?
15, all right. What is a percheron?
It's a horse.
A horse is correct.
You folks are really climbing now. You have $40.
You got $40, and here's your third question.
$30.
How much are you going to bet?
$30.
$30. What is a New Zealand white?
It's a chicken.
You agree with that?
I don't know. Well,
I'm sorry, but it's a rabbit. They taste a good deal alike, but it was the wrong answer.
And they've dropped to $10, Groucho.
Well, that's a shame. You dropped to $10. All right. Now, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much will you bet?
$10.
Okay. What is a leghorn?
It's a chicken.
A chicken is correct.
And they wind up with a grand total of $20.
Thanks, and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, stick around now. You may get a chance at the big question.
Friends, our next couple has been in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know the secret word is grass. Perhaps they'll say it while they're talking to you, Groucho. Okay, fellas, bring them in. Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a trash man and a housewife to be his partner. And here they are, Marshall Ravens and Christina McLean. Meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, welcome to You Bet Your Life. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. Mr. Marshall Ravens, you're a trash collector, eh?
Oh, that's right.
Pretty snappy dresser for a trash collector.
I only work the daytime.
This isn't part of the stuff that you collected, have you?
No, I don't have that kind of luck.
Are you in business for yourself?
Yes, I am.
What do you call your business?
A Yellow Barrel Company.
And Christina McLean, is it?
That's right.
It's a Scotch name, huh?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Nice one, too.
Thank you.
What sort of work does your husband do, Mrs. McLean?
He's a retired railroad man.
Do you have any trash at your house?
Why, of course. Every housewife has trash.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Some women think a lot of their husbands. How did you meet your husband, Mrs. Mack? I'll call you Mrs. Mack, huh?
All right, that's fine. Well, I went home from work one day, and my mother was having the winter cold put in, and she was also canning strawberries. So I was going down the cellar steps quite gingerly, carrying this crate of strawberries, when a voice said, would you like some help there? So when he said that, I was so scared I dropped the strawberries and fell down the rest of the steps. Well, the fella, he came out and tried to help me, and my mother came to the cellar door, and she yelled, "For heaven's sake, what's going on down there?" He said, "Well, I'm trying to help your daughter pick up the strawberries." And she thought he meant pick them. And she didn't know.
Your mother didn't hear very well, huh?
No, she was up in the kitchen. She couldn't hear me.
Does she hear well in the kitchen? Huh?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't even know your mother.
Oh, you'd like her if you did.
Oh, I'd be crazy about her, but we have an oil burner. So very little contact with strawberries or coal, huh? Now, Marshall, what do you think of Mrs. McLean's story?
Well, I thought it was a very fine story.
Yeah. Well, you're accustomed to trash. Now,
No, that wasn't nice.
I like the story. I thought it had a nice, tender quality to it. Now, Marshall, are you employed by the city or the county?
Neither one. I'm private enterprise.
Private, huh? Well, you're independent. You mean you won't pick up any trash that doesn't appeal to you, is that right?
That's right.
He's a true collector, this fellow, huh? Now, how many homes do you service in a day, Marshall?
I'll make about 200 pickups a day.
Really? I must be in the wrong business. I haven't made one in 3 weeks, huh? Now, Mrs. Mack, would you be interested in Marshall's trash collection service?
No, I don't believe so.
Marshall, you've got a job. Sell Mrs. McLean your service. Go ahead.
Well, Mrs. McLean, we leave you a barrel, first of all, so you can put everything in a barrel. You can roll it to the curb. In a barrel, you can put leaves, so many items, grass clippings, and...
Grass with a silver. Well, you kids have just made $100 between you. You divide this between you,
oh,
huh?
Oh, isn't that grass?
Isn't that wonderful, huh? It just shows if you talk long enough, anything can happen around here. Well, how about it, Mrs. McLean? Are you sold on this pitch?
Yes, but he doesn't go by my house.
I'm sure he could arrange that. Where is your house?
In Niagara Falls, Ontario.
Well, on your next trip out here, bring your trash with you, Mrs. Do your customers ever give you any trouble, Marshall?
Yes, every now and then, we hear about or we catch someone in the middle of the night sneaking out of the house and carrying their trash across the street or to their neighbors and dumping into the barrel. And
what a shabby thing to do, huh? Now, I think we've covered the trash situation pretty carefully, unless there's something you'd like to add. You've got anything to say,
How's the trash situation at your home?
I do the same thing with mine as my neighbor does. I throw it in his barrel. Well, I think you two are going to make a lot of money as you go through life, and your paper profits will be wonderful on this route, Marshall. Now, you're going to play your bet your life for $1,000. You run your $20 into more than our other couples, and you'll get a chance at the big question. I can't tell you how much they won, but Fenneman is offstage to remind our listeners.
The dance instructor and the writing instructor are ahead with $20.
Now, here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected American meanings for English words as your category. Is that right?
That's right.
Here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try? Talk right up.
Ten.
$10. Remember, you've got 100 already. All right, they call it a lift. What do we call it?
Elevator.
Elevator is correct.
And you folks are on your way. You have $30.
Now, you got $30. Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
20.
All right, what are they talking about when they refer to ladders in reference to their clothing? Kind of tough, but take a stab at it anyhow.
Shoes?
No, you were close. It's, it runs in stockings. That's what they call it.
They now have $10.
Oh, the voice of doom here. Well, you're down to $10. That's too bad. All right, you're going to bet your $10 on this one?
Yes.
All right, what is our word for suspender belt?
Braces. Suspender belt.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Suspender belt? Yeah. You mean the suspenders they put
in? In England, they call it a suspender belt. What do we call it?
Suspenders. Suspenders.
No, braces. No. I'm sorry. It's a girdle. Well,
I'm not familiar
you shouldn't have known that, but you should certainly have known that. I'm surprised at you. If you'd spend less time in that soft coal, Mrs. Deere.
Well, Groucho, these people went broke.
Well, we can't let them go away.
Absolutely not. We'll get a bad reputation, so...
All right. Well, you've got that already, Fenneman, but I haven't. All right, here's one more chance to win some money. You get this one right, and we'll give you $10. And no help in the audience, please. In what city was the Boston Tea Party held?
Boston.
In Boston, that's right! thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Fenneman, who's ahead?
The dance instructor and the unmarried man that worked at the stable is ahead with $20. Do you know if that's true or not?
No, I don't, but since you said it...
He's ahead with $20.
As much as you said it, I doubt it.
And our next couple has been off stage, so they, of course, don't know the secret word is grass. Just before we went on the air, Groucho, our studio audience selected a young lady who works in an employment agency, Miss Mildred Herodine. And her partner is a yacht broker, Mr. Charles Beauchamp. And here they are now. Folks, come on over here and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers, folks. And if you say the secret word, you'll spend $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. Mrs. Herodine, is that right?
That's right.
Well, where are you from, Mildred?
Salem, Massachusetts.
Mr. Beauchamp, is that...
Beauchamp,
a yacht
broker. Yes, sir.
Beauchamp, is it? You're a yacht broker, is
yes,
that right?
Yes, that's my business.
I thought you looked pretty crafty. Well, where are you from, Charlie, my boy?
Iowa.
Iowa, huh?
Yeah.
You're in the yacht business and you're from Salem, huh?
That's right.
You should be from Salem if you're in the yacht business.
That's right.
You do Salem, don't you?
Oh, yes, once in a while.
I'll scratch something out of this yet, huh? Who do you work for, Mr. Beauchamp?
Well, I'm in business for myself.
I see. And how is business?
Oh, very good. I can't complain.
Well, would you if you could?
Oh, I would.
How many yachts did you sell today?
Oh, none today.
Well, aren't people hoarding yachts these days? You didn't sell any today, but business is good, eh?
Yeah.
How many don't you sell on a bad day?
Well, you don't buy a yacht just like you go out and buy a pound of hamburger, you know.
Well, if the price of hamburger gets much higher, there won't be much difference. Huh? Now, Mildred, at your agency, do you fill any type of job or do you just handle certain types?
Just certain types.
Would you be interested in my type, Mildred?
Uh-uh.
Not so quick with the answer. I would have been flattered by just a little hesitation. Obviously, you're not interested in handsome, dashing young men, eh?
Oh, yes, I am.
Something tells me my barber's been lying to me. Eh? Now, let's find out something about your business, Mr. Beauchamp. For example, just what is a yacht?
Well, a yacht is a boat...
That I know. I mean...
I'd say 40 foot and running around $20,000 to $2 million.
Really? And how many of these financial disasters have you sold this year?
Well, I've turned over about 12.
You've turned over 12 boats?
Yes.
And you sold them anyway? Suppose I bought a $2 million yacht now. Where could I go in it?
Oh, with a yacht of that size, you'd go anywhere you wanted to.
Look pretty silly going up Wilshire Boulevard. Well, suppose I just bought a cheap little thing, say around $40,000. Where could I go in that?
Well, you could go to Catalina on weekends. That's about the only place you can go around here.
That's about all you could do with a $40,000 yacht, go to Catalina?
Yeah.
Oh, what you don't know about yachts, Mr. Beauchamp. Huh? I can go fishing, too, you know. Huh? Anything unusual ever happened to a yacht broker, Mr. Beauchamp?
Oh, yes, quite often. It wasn't so very long ago. I was showing a boat I just sold, and we'd been all through the boat, and he said, well, how is the running rigging on the boat? And I said, oh, it's just fine. It's all brand new, and... As I said that, I leaned up against the boom, and the line just parted like that, and I fell in the bay.
And did they fish you out?
Well, I fished myself out. The party that was buying the boat was quite a comedian. He looked down at me, and he said, well, pardon me, can I get your hat for you? It was floating off down the bay.
He wasn't a professional comedian, huh?
I don't know, but I think he was.
Well, now tell me, suppose you sell a yacht. Let's say a $2 million job. Now, what do you get out of it?
Oh, I get 10% off the top.
You get 10% off the top? Doesn't the poor sucker even get a poop deck for his $2 million? Why would anyone need a yacht broker, Commodore? What's to stop me from going out and buying a yacht? Besides money, I mean. How do you earn your 10%?
Well, first I know that the boat is all right, that there's no worms or dry rot in it, and that it's a good, clean deal.
What do you mean by a clean deal?
Well, no dirty bilge.
What's a dirty bilge? Is that what you get at the first of the month? What's the most luxurious yacht you've ever handled?
It was one that was built in the Great Lakes. It's a very modern, ultra-modern, streamlined design. There's about 10 staterooms. They're all double staterooms. And they have real deep, thick rugs throughout the boat. And, in fact, a fella could walk through that rug with a hole in his pants. You couldn't even see it.
And what was that? You could walk through what?
That rug.
Yeah, how?
With a hole in the seat of his pants, and you couldn't even see it. They're so deep.
Guy buys a yacht for $2 million and has got a hole in his pants. That fellow's not a very shrewd businessman. Now, how much a month would it cost to operate a scow like that?
Oh, it would run about $100,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. That's with two pair of pants, I suppose, huh? Now, Mildred, just how do you go about finding the right girl for the right job? Now, suppose I wanted a girl and called you up. What would you do?
Well, I'd ask you some questions first.
I thought that was a catch. I want a redhead with nice eyes and one who is a whiz at keeping her figures in line. Now, how about it?
Well, does that secretary have to be a fast typist?
Well, not too fast. I should be able to catch her after about the third line. Well, you've been an interesting couple, and I think I'll find my own secretary. But we're happy to have you here anyhow. Now, you're going to play You Bet Your Life. You beat our other two couples. You'll get a chance at the $1,000 DeSoto Plymouth question. Now, I can't tell you how much the other couples won, but Fenneman is offstage to remind our listeners.
The dance instructor and the writing instructor are still leading with $20.
Now, let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected birds and animals, male and female, as your category.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you risk?
10.
All right, Mildred? All right, cow is the female. What is the male?
Heifer, isn't it?
Bull.
Bull.
A bull is right. You agree with that, I'm sure. Well, you folks are on your way. You have $30. The fellow's been on a yacht. He said he knows a lot about cattle, huh? Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
You try this time.
I'll try 15.
All right. What do you call a female deer?
A doe.
A doe is right, and you've won some right there.
Here's the climbing now. We have $45.
Well, you got a lot of dough. You got $45. Here's your third question. Now, how much of the 45?
20.
Okay.
Are you looking at him for advice or just admiringly? $20. What do you call a female pig?
Sow.
A sow is correct.
Ah, you're really climbing now. We have $65.
He knows more about sows than cows, huh? All right, you got $65. Now, how much are you going to try of the 65?
You guess it.
Let's try 25.
25. All right. What do you call a male goose?
A gander.
A gander is correct.
And they wind up with a grand total of $90. They are the winners. That means that you, too, get a chance at the $1,000 DeSoto Plymouth question.
Friends, I think you'll agree that you get the best job done when you go to a specialist. Well, when you need service of any kind for your car, take it to a DeSoto Plymouth dealer, because there you'll find specialists in the field of service. You'll like the quick, speedy service DeSoto Plymouth dealers will give you. They have factory-trained mechanics who work with the most modern equipment. Right on hand, they have a large supply of factory-engineered and inspected Mopar parts. This means you're on your way quickly without needless waiting. So next time your car needs service, take it to the place you know you'll get the work of specially trained men. Drive in at the sign of a DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
I thought they did it very well this time, right?
And here's our winning couple, Groucho, the lady from the employment agency and the yacht broker, all ready for the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question.
Well, this will seem like small potatoes to you after that $2 million commission. But I'm sure you can use the 500 if you win, brother. All right, here we go for $1,000. I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you. And think carefully, and please, no help in the audience. Here it is. It's a long one. Think carefully. Just 100 years ago, a unique republic was founded. Their official language is English. They use the dollar as a medium of exchange. And the country was founded by a settlement of citizens from the United States. What country is it that is so much like our own in government? right, what is the answer you two have decided upon?
Heidi.
No, I'm sorry. It's Liberia. So that means the big question next week will be worth $1,500. Well, you did pretty well. Let's see, you lost the big money, but how much did you win? You won how much? $90 in the quiz?
$90 in the quiz, yes.
And no secret word?
No secret word.
Well,
for
that isn't bad for a half hour's work, $90. Congratulations and thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, when the big question will be worth $1,500. And don't miss Groucho's television show, also presented by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation.
And when you drive in, tell them Groucho sent you. Just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council about good highway habits. Don't save the checkup of your windshield wipers for a rainy day. You Bet Your Life is produced by Don Goodell, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith, music by Jerry Fielding. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do, and so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.